can talk.
All right, it is 5 o'clock. So go ahead and call the City of Columbia Council work session for Monday, April 3rd, 2023 to order. We've got one major thing, but three different sections of it for our work session today. I will note, I will ask Dave Sorrell, we have the opportunity to go into closed session if needed. So if you notice the conversation starting to go in that direction, if you could stop us. If we are in open session, I appreciate that.
Got my best.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and kick it over to utilities. And also apologize to everyone that it's really hot. Hopefully we all wore deodorant, and thank you.
Okay, so.
Yeah, maybe spread out from people.
Tonight's really dedicated to electric, and there's a few things that we want to go over. And really what we're looking to the council for direction on how to move forward, particularly with like transmission has been on pause now for a few years, and we just need to know what council would like us to do. So the three items we're going to talk about a little bit are utility assistance that came up at our work session last month when we went over the cost of service. So I'm going to give you an update on that. Then we'd like feedback on cost of service and rates that was presented last month. And then we want to talk about what are our options for transmission and substation improvement. So I think this was included on the agenda and we sent this out. It kind of gives you an update of how much money has been provided from external agencies and the city for utility assistance for customers that couldn't afford to pay their bills in 21, 22, and year to date, 23. That does include CARES Act funding that CMCA administered and the donation from the Crossing in 2021. As of today, or when this was prepared a week or two ago, the remaining program funds for the city's utility assistance programs are a total of $97,329. And we've appropriated a total of $600,000 to date into the new city utility assistance program that started in July of 21. And with that balance in that program of $68,000, we don't have enough money to make it through the fiscal year based on what's been used to date in the historics. And so there is a request to appropriate an additional $300,000 that's included in it's being introduced tonight on the budget amendment, and that would get us through the end of the fiscal year for certain. Yes.
So I sent an email asking for additional information. I wonder, did somebody send that to you?
Yes, we've got it.
Okay, but did you get to read it, Mr. Sorrell?
I did.
So how is it that we could go about finding out what the need is? I appreciate that the city has put a substantial sum of money into it, including that those surplus CARES Act dollars in 2022. But how do we go about determining what the true need is? Because I hear stories all the time of people that we are leaving behind with our existing programs. Is there a process that the utilities can go through in collaboration with other agencies to determine how many folks have applied for utility assistance, were not granted utility assistance, so that you could figure out what the drop rate or the gap rate is or whatever term you want to use, who falls off of that, and what exactly are their needs? Are we collecting data to determine that?
We are not. Utilities are not, because we don't. We receive the payments and we keep track of the payments received, but the programs are administered by external agencies or by the health department. We could work with them with the health department particularly, to see if that kind of information can be gathered. And I don't know exactly what the requirements are to qualify. Do you?
One's 150%, poverty level amount's 200% poverty level for the new city assistance program. And they were giving $200 a year. It is now $600 per year per household per fiscal year. I don't know if Steve Hall is coming in or not yet, but he was going to try to be here. Those are, I know, the new requirements for it. As far as anything else above and beyond that, I don't know.
I'd be interested in knowing what the health department, because there's a lot of layers to that. So say the city gives them $600, and that's about what LIHEAP gives them, which is the program that's administered by CMCA. Does one disqualify them from the other? And is that enough to meet their needs? You know, over the course of a year, I have a relatively energy efficient home, but my utility bills exceed $1,200 over the cost of the year. If I lived in a house that wasn't energy efficient, my utility bills would probably be closer to some of my neighbors, which are $300 a month, so that's $3,600 a year. So are we at that place, Mr. Seawood, that we could ask our public health folks to start collecting that data to see who we're missing?
We can see what the data can't. Part of it's we'll have to see what information we have.
Okay.
Because it is people's personal information. So all of it is subject to manipulate, kind of see what it is, and some not exist. But we can do that now.
I think also in this, I remember a few years ago we had looked into house addresses that routinely ask for the assistance, regardless of who the person, you know, who the resident on the bill is. And I think that might be a good way for us to identify if it's in a place that we might want to see if they know about our energy efficiency programs that we offer or assistance for making the house more efficient. That way we know that it's, you know, the household, like the structure that needs it. All right. Any other questions for staff on the utility assistance programs?
Yeah, I had a question this time. You thought that you all would need another $300,000, and that would take you through the end of September.
It should probably go further than that. We just looked at the average of what has been spent to date and said, well, how many more months do we have in the year?
Okay. All right.
That's based on previous demand, then, and the expectation of that kind of demand
would stay relatively the same as what it is currently.
Any other questions for staff? All right.
So the next item is electric rates. So last month, our consultant was here and provided the cost of service study results and the proposed rate structure that they have developed. Really, we need some guidance from council to move forward with any rate adjustment. First, are you satisfied with the idea to increase revenues by $8.3 million, which is overall a 6.9% increase, although that you just distributed it's not uniform across all the different rate classes. And then, you know, do you want to use what we've found from the cost of service and increase the customer charge, reducing the subsidy between the rate classes and bring the tiers closer together on our inclined block structure and implement the power cost adjustment? So after we answer questions and get feedback, then if you want to move forward with rate adjustment, we would come back with ordinances that would modify the rates and revise our power cost adjustment if we're directed.
And I forgot to look. Do you have slides with this part for those questions? Okay.
That's what I was saying. That was just last month, and so we didn't put that whole PowerPoint back. I got it here, I'm not going to go through it again unless we have to.
I guess I would like a review of those three questions that you asked. You know, they increased customer charge. You're talking about increasing the base rate, correct?
Yep.
And that was 6.9% over 3 years. So,
percentage, let me
flip through. It was last month, so I have to say I did not go back and look at that again.
So it's an overall 6.9% increase, but the average increases are shown here for like residential gas heat class.
Right,
it's 10.4% on average. 9.8% for electric heat, heat pumps 7.9%. You get down into industrial.
What did you say?
4.3,
yeah. Are you talking your base rate? I realized I sat through this last month. Actually, I think I talked to you about this before that.
So we go back.
I don't have this.
I don't have that. I can pull it up if you'd like me to. So our current rate and then our proposed
rate. Okay, so our current rate is 16.31.
That's the customer charge. For gas heating, we go up to $22.
Okay.
And then each one of these tiers change.
Okay. And then are we still charging more the more electricity you use? Or are we still trying to use
so
that?
We still have the inclined increasing block structure, but it's been reduced.
Okay. Reduced, I'm okay
the
with,
difference
but we still
between
have that.
Yes.
So if you use more energy, you pay a higher cost per unit.
So we still have our three-tiered system for like summer? Because someone had asked me that,
three
and I was like,
four.
I thought we did. Okay.
Yes, it's just been
compressed.
Okay.
And then what was your other question? Back to the previous slide now.
Jump back to my other one. Well, that was bringing the tiers closer together and reducing the subsidy between the rate classes where industrial is paying, you know, more than they really should and residential is not paying as much as they should. So the increase percentage-wise for industrial would be 4.3, whereas residential is closer to 10.9.
Okay. And implementing a PCA is what?
Power cost adjustment.
That's the power cost adjustment. Where,
yes, I remember that.
Where we take our forecast power use, and then if our costs are greater, then we spread it out over the remainder of the physical year. If they're lower, we actually give a credit.
Okay.
Do
you remember that? That was a long conversation.
Yeah. And then also for the reminder of the 6.9% overall, so that was because we haven't had incremental increases over the last, I don't remember how many years, because we haven't had the incremental, that's why they're kind of doing it all at once. But going forward, your proposed strategy is to do more incremental. I think that's what the Water and Light Advisory Board put in their letter as well,
mm-hmm.
is they do want to see more, because that way we're both signaling to the bond rating industries, but also just that kind of the normal fiscal management that should be done. Is that right? Okay.
However, you think the 6.9 is enough for more than just this year?
3 years is what is projected, yes, with this cost of service.
Right, so nothing. And so no rate increases for the last 4 years, obviously lost a lot of ground to inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, more than 6.9% just in the last year, probably.
So is your question whether or not in 3 years
I'm going to... It's not
really
a question, it's just conceptually, I mean, it makes sense that it's a, you know, a number in that range. Just
look at inflation. If you divide that 6.9 by 4, that's about what our average increase has been over the last like 15 years when we have had increases.
Right, but the idea of incremental is so that it's not such a shock to customers.
Yeah, then if we did that every year moving forward,
yeah,
then we wouldn't be facing the 6.9 all at once.
Yeah. And then to go back to Betsy's question, the rates are still an inverted block structure. It's just that because you're increasing the base charge to cover the costs, as well as reducing the difference between the tiers, that's why it's a higher increase for residential gas. Is that what I heard?
Well, the higher increase
for
residential
for
is because
wise.
Residential's not paying the full cost of the service, and in industrial commercial's paying really more than it costs to provide the service.
How did we get to that place?
I don't know. I think I got that slide in here.
Yes.
Because that's a lot of people are having trouble with that, with the idea that residential is not paying their fair share and industry has been subsidizing the residential rates.
That's
what's been done in the past because of the concerns about whether residential customers can pay this and that we are.
Kind of in the philosophy,
yeah.
Right? As a municipal utility.
You could make decisions to subsidize industrial with residential to encourage economic development, but we've not done that. We've had the opposite. Here's a slide from the consultant presented that shows here where we're at. And there again, it says anybody that's over the 5.53 is paying more than their fair share, and anybody that's under the 5.53 is basically getting the subsidy from the other classes. We implemented the structure that's been proposed. Then you got to look at 10.12, and you'll see that some are still well above it, but it's been reduced.
So I conceptually understand the base charge, and the way I understand it, you can tell me if I'm thinking about this accurately, is the base charge is how much it would cost the utility to get that to the meter attached to my house. It's not to buy the power, but just to get the power to my house. Am I correct in how I think about the base charge?
Well, and it's all the billing and administrative stuff that's
associated
with that.
Well, sure, and that's again, to
yes.
get that power to my meter.
Yes.
And then there's two other levels of charge, and this is where I was confused by the consultant when he was here last time. There's a portion of it that has to do with the demand for power, and then there's the actual usage for power. And I think I heard him say that if we implemented too much conservation, we would ultimately, I think he was suggesting we wouldn't cover our costs on the demand side. Is that what he was saying?
Yes.
So help me understand the demand piece of that better. Is that to make sure that there's enough power in the market for us to draw through our distribution system, or?
And that there's enough power to serve all your needs. So if you start adding in an EV charger
mm-hmm.
and you electrify your whole house, all of a sudden your demand for energy is going to be greater. And so we have to be able to serve that demand.
So
that's capacity, right?
Projecting.
No, mm-hmm. projecting capacity. No.
It's similar, yes.
Okay.
So is part of the kilowatt hour charge including the demand, the cost of demand for, say, me as a residential customer versus a commercial customer, or?
We don't have demand charge on residential right now. It's
so the demand, that's all on commercial?
Yes.
Okay.
Commercial industrial has demand charges. We don't have a demand charge separate for residential.
So would the demand charge be the reason why it's perceived that the commercial is subsidizing residential because they're being asked to cover the cost of demand?
I don't believe so. I think it's just the way the rates ended up being developed over time. I don't know the history on it.
Could you speak
up? Oh, I don't think so. I don't know how that subsidy got put into place,
mm-hmm.
but it's been developed over time. I don't know that it's always been there even.
I'm thinking about my other question. I'll think for a few minutes.
And so you, now this is connected to the water treatment plant upgrades, because you were told by rating agencies, or it was implied or suggested, that it would be easier to sell the water bonds with an electric increase. Is that correct? And is this amount, this $8.3 million, is that
Wait, quick clarification. Because water and light bonds are together according to our charter.
Correct. Yes.
So it's not because of but the water, but you're saying basically.
Right. Because when you issue a water bond, it's technically a water.
Right.
Light bond.
Right. I was like, just in case, like all of a sudden.
And this does
start happening.
This does keep the debt coverage ratio covered for the next 3 years moving forward.
Now, we also saw in the audit, the financials, that, you know, our debt coverage ratio last year was still, you know, sufficient. The way that it was
calculated,
measured in those financials, even with the additional cost. So I guess, and I know that there are several different ways of calculating, you know, coverage ratios. So I guess my question is, you know, just help me justify that you know, put those pieces together for me, right? So, you know, on the one hand, you can have, explain the different coverage ratios.
To what?
Excuse the different coverage ratios. Why is it that we see in the audited financials that they were like 2.2 or something combined for water and light?
So, I can answer that, and Matthew can. Matthew, to your assistance, but I believe the financial statements don't pilot, correct?
Yes.
And what we take into account does include pilot. The pilot payments to the general fund.
What do the bond people, how do they figure it? Because we can figure different ways, but they're the ones who are going to look at this and that will determine bond ratings, right?
They look at it both ways within the covenants, but they do recognize that pilot is a set in the charter and that it is something that has to be changed.
So the 0.79 that you guys showed us for 22 is what they're, okay.
Yes.
And that's the one they will look at in addition to.
Yes.
Okay.
And the 0.79, which is the electric only.
Right.
Or sorry, it was water and electric only. And obviously, we're just looking at electric here, but yeah. It included the pilot payment.
Okay.
Mayor, can I ask for clarification?
Yeah, Pat.
So is the reason why the coverage ratio that Matt is talking about at 2.2 is artificially higher is because you're not taking into account that you're paying pilot to the general fund? Is that why? Okay. And what would it be once you take pilot out of it? What's the debt coverage ratio?
It was 2.2. Did you say 2.2 in the financials with without pilot?
Right, yeah.
So it's even higher with pilot.
It's on the good side with,
yeah,
without pilot.
That's pre-pilot.
Pre-pilot. But aren't we, what's our goal? Are we supposed to be at 1.2 or just
1.1?
But 2.2 sounds like a lot more.
It is. Without pilot included.
Without pilot included. That tells me that.
Which is an expense.
0.79 with pilot.
Yeah.
And we need to be at 1.1.
Okay, wait a minute. Say that number again.
0.79.
So with paying the pilot to the general fund, our debt coverage ratio drops to 0.79. It goes from 2.2 to 0.79, and 0.79 is not sufficient because you want to be at 1.2. And so this $8.9 million collective rate increase is going to get you back up to 1.2 or 2.2?
1.2.
1.2.
Or above. Or above.
Okay. What are we doing to recover the cost of the 22, what I understood to be $22 million in excess fuel charges or electricity charges during the very difficult winter we just had? Are we just writing that off with general funds or what?
That's just coming out of the reserve, of the utilities reserve account right now. And that's one of the reasons for updating the power cost adjustment so that if we had something like that happens in the future, we would be able to recover that cost during the course of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons you need to have
power cost adjustment. There is
not
a fuel.
Not just that, why you have money in reserve.
Yes.
Because people have brought that up, why do you have this money in reserve? You shouldn't have it. It's a waste to have that money in reserve. But
if we wouldn't have had any money in the reserve, we would have been in trouble when we needed that $22 million last year.
But then your PCA is hopefully going to keep this power cost adjustment.
Yes.
We keep this from happening, from being a problem in the future.
It sounds like we were lucky to have that much in reserves. What is your goal for what you carry in reserves? I mean, what's the prudent amount of reserves that...
20% of our operating expenses.
Plus next year's CIP. Enterprise funded CIP.
Yep. Plus next year's CIP.
And that's from the policy resolution from council, I believe.
Yeah.
So part of my trouble with rates just over the last several years is that we haven't had rate increases, yet at the same time, we've been accumulating reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always sort of a a tension there, right, where you say we're adding to reserves year after year, and it's a good thing because we needed it this past year, but at the same time, you're also saying that we need to increase rates to cover our operating costs. And so that's...
So why have our reserves gotten as high as they were to make Matt feel that we don't need any rate increases? What we're, because I've heard this from you, year after year, that there's too much in reserve. So is that the CIP projects, and are we not spending that money, or some of it's not?
Well, the CIP gets...
Dave, you're a very quiet speaker.
Sorry.
Your outside voice, Dave.
I need a microphone.
Yes.
We've talked about this.
The CIP is restricted, so those cash funds are restricted every year during the budget process, and as they're spent down, the money obviously gets lower. Some of it's been personnel, so we've been budgeting, assuming we're going to have all our positions full, and we haven't for the last several years, so we have a savings there. Expenses have been less than we anticipated because of a lot of our personnel being in need, which then affects materials because we don't have the staff to make work, and they're not buying the materials or not going to training, things like that. That has been a lot of it over the past few years.
So sorry, you're behind, Aaron Ted. So to clarify, when you were talking about CIP projects, there's the story out there that we have CIP projects that we haven't done, and so that money is just what's gone into reserves. But it is not, because it's restricted, so that's not, it does not go into reserves. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Any other questions on this part?
You're budgeting for people they don't have.
You have a question, Pam? Or no?
No, we're just talking.
Okay.
No. Well, I guess, following up on what Matt has asked here, we've had excess revenue for the past several years, and part of that is because we haven't hired up to full capacity. If we were at full capacity, where would we be in terms of revenues? I know you probably would have to put a pencil to paper for that. Right. But I mean, my assumption is we need a rate increase so that we can continue to operate.
Well, we've had personnel cost of living increases of, I don't even remember, 8% or something the last, or more, the last two years.
So excuse me, at any rate then, what you're saying is you need the rate increase in order to meet the needs that we anticipate, assuming that we staff up and that we're able to carry out projects that would then be to be expended, the money would be expended for that.
Along with what you said earlier, as far as the cost of materials and everything,
right,
would increase,
right,
as well.
Have you adjusted your expectations on what you can, actually implement out of your annual operating budget in terms of like maintenance and upkeep and annual projects like that?
Projects. So the increase amount is more than what it should be.
You also are a quiet talker, reminder. Yeah, Pat.
So
yes,
we also want to raise the pay of our city employees, not only to attract more city employees for some of these specialized positions, but also to keep the good ones we have. So in doing that, has there been a calculation made between, okay, we have vacant positions. For the positions we do have, we're hoping to provide them with a generous pay increase. I don't know what that's going to be, but generous by whatever standards. And have we calculated the difference between how many of these positions we expect to fill, how much we're budgeting and setting aside for increased pay, or are we not at that point yet?
We're not at that
point yet. So if a part of this is the projects that we might or might not do, depending on revenues and so forth, if we have a chance to, I hear what you're saying about the recommendation from WLAB. So if we get to a place where revenues are adequate, could we reintroduce those? I assume we could reintroduce those projects into the mix, right? Yeah.
There's on the list.
Undergrounding business loop, as an example. Yeah.
But as of right now, what the board or what the advisory board sees is that we need this in order to just do what we need to do in the normal order of business, cutting back on some projects, but we could reintroduce those depending on how things go, essentially. So that would take up, we wouldn't have the kind of extra revenue because we would do the projects in that case.
All right, so we got a few comments from community members expressing concern over, obviously, we're making assumptions, right? We don't have AMI implemented, so we're making assumptions. We've obviously been making assumptions since we created the utility, so like that for me, I have some questions. So I guess, when do we expect implementation of AMI? Because we're talking about this 10% increases as if we had done incremental over the last 4 years. You're saying it's going to last for 3 years. What's our expectation so that when we're revisiting this, we might have more real-time data that can give us better information about setting future rates for especially residential customers? Because I think, obviously, we get real-time data for industrial. Some commercial has more data for us, but residential is really the one that's tricky. So I know I'm asking you crystal ball, and we haven't like sold the bonds to do AMI, but I know we have hopes and dreams to do it. So
we had an RFP out, consultant services to assist with development of AMI,
mm-hmm.
and we've got responses back. We're actually going to schedule interviews. And once we get somebody selected from that, I would hope we could have a time frame that would be more realistic. Say this is what we could expect to maybe have this implemented. The funding for it right now is what? 24, 25, 26 is what we projected it out in the CIP, I believe.
Okay.
So these rates you think would cover that, assuming
that's included in the rate increase to pay for that without doing a bond sale.
Okay.
In that fiscal year, 24, 25, 26?
25, 26, 27.
Yeah. So we will be talking about...
26, 27,
right,
yeah.
So we will
so
be talking
years.
About another rate increase before we have AMI completely implemented.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
That would be
yeah.
fair.
Okay.
But information on the power cost adjustment for this year, if we'd implemented it in October. But I know that Mr. Foster had asked about it at the last meeting. So this, with 2022 and how weird everything went with the market, this is what the power cost adjustment would have been if we started it in October of 22. And you can see that from October through May, there would have been a small credit provided. And then it goes crazy here when the power cost, purchase cost went up to where in September, to recover that throughout the fiscal year, it would have been an additional $23 on someone's bill. So I like the mechanism that they provided, but I think they need to give us some leeway so that we don't have a situation like this to say, well, don't recover during the fiscal year, during the last half of the year, spread it out over, say, the next 6 months. So if you take the same thing and you do a 6 month spread out, then it would go to 770 versus at 2343, but then it would spread it out across the first half of the next year.
repeat. Well, okay, so you're basically saying you check at the end of the year.
We do it each month.
Oh.
Yeah.
We update it each month. So if you do it like this,
you remember
is
there was 12 months of forecast.
Yeah.
That it started with.
Yeah.
And then each month you put in the actuals, and then you recalculate it
okay.
each month.
How much did you? How much additional revenue?
Kel,
do you
have the capacity to actually do this? Do you have enough staff? Who
oh,
is
yeah,
doing
this?
This piece
actually,
we do,
this
yes.
This is a pretty quick calculation, actually.
Is somebody sitting at a computer?
So this right here is right here is what is forecast if we would have implemented that at the beginning of this fiscal year.
That's the increase to their bill.
That's the increase to your bill if you use 756 kilowatt hours of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
The PCA over the left is what we would calculate, and that everybody gets that same PCA rate. So we're not going into each individual bill.
Okay.
We just change that just rate.
The rate is. Yeah, my question about capacity was, how are you going to deal with all the phone calls when somebody gets a $23 increase in their bill?
That's why suggested if we implement this, that we put in a methodology that has a trigger level that then says spread it out over the next 6 months.
Huh. Can I ask what are our, so we don't do, this is almost starting to make me think of like time of use rates, like where things change based on what the market is telling us or what is happening. Because we haven't done that, right, and we haven't normally done that sort of adjustments, do we have fail safes in place to make sure that if we do like an office space and one decimal point gets over, all of a sudden things don't? You know what I mean? Like, what are the things that kind of protect us from user error?
Put that in place. I mean, we don't even have this in place currently, but we would have.
Well,
to
that's
do
I
that.
Think that's
right.
my concern. All of a sudden, we're doing
do
a new
but
thing.
The last time we implemented a new billing software, there were a lot of problems.
Yeah. Yes.
Service staff said that this can be done with software.
So if you did this, I like the idea of averaging that over the, but wouldn't that have a fiscal impact in that we would incur cost ahead of it being recaptured? And what impact would that have?
It would just be recaptured. Just the piece of it that was deferred to the next fiscal year would be the pieces wouldn't be captured.
That's why we have a reserve.
Yeah.
Well, so we would pay out a reserve, and then we would put it back into reserve, and
right.
well, put it back
exactly.
into the yeah.
credit, essentially.
I mean, this looks pretty bad if you all of a sudden you get a $23 increase, but if you have the ability to spread it out over 6 months, then that increase goes down to $7. And that was a very strange year as far as the cost that we saw.
So when you're looking for guidance from us, I want to be sure about, as this conversation continues, what you're looking for. I mean, we're not, are we voting on a rate increase here tonight without voting? I know we're
no,
not.
No, no, no.
Okay.
It's,
so the question that, I know we're not. So the question is, what are we doing?
So what we'd like to know is, you know, do you want us to come back with ordinances to modify the electric rates and to revise the fire cost adjustment? And if so, do you want to use what presented for the rate modifications, or do we want to use a 6.9% across the board, or do we want to do something in between?
I would be okay with what the consultants had recommended and what the Water and Light Board thought was reasonable.
Can I ask?
It's sort of painful, but I don't know that I have any, that I'm any smarter than that. I think we're going to end up having to subsidize some of our lower-income folks and maybe work a little harder on the energy efficiency.
With what, though? We have how much in utility assistance? Left?
It's
67,000. But I mean, what are we going to do? Not pay
bills
too?
I know.
You know, I feel like we can't not
Yeah, I was going to ask the Water and Light Advisory Board if they had some comments or feedback.
So on the utility systems, I can't say anything specific yet, other than we have a discussion on Wednesday on maybe one way to make sure that that is through revenue that we'll be coming through. So we talked about our agenda. It's on our agenda for Wednesday. If you look at the revenues that are coming in from this rate adjustment, of course, some percentage of that automatically gets essentially taxed through highway. And so our idea is that's extra money going to the general fund that wasn't necessarily expected. The affordability program needs the money. And so the idea was to send the money from pilot, the proposal to send money from pilot essentially back into the affordability. So the, it's impacting the bills and then the money that's going to the general fund by in the charter, right, it's required to go back into it, goes right into the affordability programs to fund these programs.
And the idea is it's also, we're a municipal utility. It's making it part of the thing.
Yeah.
What's the estimate?
I think it's about $1 million additional in pilot for next fiscal year from these. So it would be $1 million. But this is something
So utility assistance that you all are going to be discussing on Wednesday will probably come in part of the memo that we see whenever you guys are talking to us about the electric rates. That aside, Water and Light Advisory Board, David, do you want to provide anything on your feedback on the electric rates as well as the PCA?
I think our number one priority is meeting the financial obligations of the $8.3 million. As far as rate design, I will admit, on water, I can say a lot. On electric, like you said, we make a lot of assumptions, and I'm not necessarily the expert to evaluate those assumptions. And I think we can't evaluate them necessarily without AMI. And so my prior was to defer to the experts and the consultants because they know more about this than me. And I think that was our general consensus. But the most important thing is meet the revenue requirements. The other thing I will say is they told us, right, there's one more crack at reevaluating the rate or reanalyzing the rates. We didn't necessarily want to do that before you guys had your feedback on it.
But that one crack is what's left in the contract before we have to go through the process of getting city council approval to expand the contract. There's one more reiteration of the numbers available to us. So if there's some adjustments that need to come out of this kind of work session, that's one more bite of the apple with this vendor to be able to produce a new iteration that reflects changes, tweaks that council or Water and Light Board. We didn't want to be too presumptuous and take that from you guys because you're obviously the private decision makers.
There's a time phase with this too, because if we wait too long, it's going to have to be rerun. We're not starting to wait until maybe as early as.
What is up with you quiet talkers? Great comment.
Speak a little louder. So basically, by waiting, it's going to have to be reanalyzed. We were looking at a start date prior to the end of this week. And if like it will be kicked out, if we have to go through a whole other analysis to bring it back to people, just be aware of that. That will likely increase that 6.9% up to a higher number. I also, and we talked about this quite a bit, is AMI. Granted, we won't have all of AMI implemented by the time we're talking about rate structure for the next cycle, but we may have enough sampling that we can use that sampling information to be able to kind of extract or expand what it would be for the whole community. So we won't be going in blind. We'll have some information. And we also could probably go to another municipal utility that has AMI and have its input for their experience to help plan that next rate cycle.
Yeah, Pat.
So, Mayor, we've been getting emails from several knowledgeable community members reinforcing the idea that the rate structure that's proposed is unfairly going to target low-income families or residential users. Do we have information that, how do we understand that predicament better?
And is that true?
I've not heard that city staff has responded to the concerns brought forward by either Mr. Windsor or Mr. Conway. Are we responding to those?
I don't know, I'm asking.
And Mr. Parker, I don't know. I'm not a city staff person.
So the question is about impact. And I know you had some example bills.
So this is just for residential gas heat, just for residential gas heat customers, and it's a breakdown of what your bill would be under the current rates on the left and the proposed structure that the consultant provided, the dollar change, and then the percent change. And it had some errors in it originally, so the yellow highlighted sections have been corrected from what was attached to the agenda. But it shows, you know, if you use absolutely no electricity and you just have your service on, that you would have a 34.9% increase in your monthly bill under the proposed structure. And that's mainly due to the customer charge going from $16.31 to $22.
Well, I don't think, though, we're saying that anyone uses zero. Right, okay. I was like.
And then it's broken down in 50 kilowatt hour increments all the way down. Do you know what our average use is, sir?
715.
That's 715, it's right there. So your average bill would go up 13.9%. Or $11.44 a month.
But you see how the percentage change is decreasing over time, and you're telling us that the consultant says that's because commercial's been subsidizing residential. No.
No.
High users have been subsidizing?
Because we're trying to bring the tiers closer together.
Because you got a big increase in your customer charge. It's almost $6. So at no use, you have a $6 increase over a $16.31.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
huge. And so then as you use energy, and those charges are applied, the percent increase decreases.
So the 34.9% is really an artificial kind of number. Nobody's going to be there. You're more likely to be there in that average.
And if, which is closer to what you saw residential gas heat, right, was the 10% increase. And I think the biggest thing to this, too, is it's not the cost per kilowatt, it's the base charge, because the base charge is going up. I mean, that's a big part of what you'll also see, that 16 to 22.
I think most of the residential charges went up between $8 and $12. It didn't matter if you're a low user or a high user. They were all around that.
The way you modeled it, you mean?
What's the recommendation?
In the recommendation.
Well, yeah, once you do the calculations, they were all between that. Because we can't predict, you know, whether a low-income user is a high-energy user or a low-energy user. So it makes it really difficult to really try to address just that group.
Well, actually, you can predict because we have their bills and their billing history, and when they're using far more than the square footage of their house would otherwise be, we do know who they are. I don't know that you guys are catching that or capturing that or looking at that.
The data we used is for people who received assistance. That wouldn't be all low-income.
No, it wouldn't. We're leaving a lot of people
at all.
Out.
But that's the data we had, and that's the line that I've got highlighted there in blue. That's their average use for the people that we had that received assistance. They actually use a little bit more than the overall average.
Of course they do. That makes perfect sense given the condition of our rental property housing stock. So given that, and I know there's exceptions sitting behind me. Hi, Amanda. By and large, when I go out in the first ward and I talk to people about their utility bills, the condition of their property is the reason why their bills are so much higher than ours. I don't understand enough about the history of rate setting for why, as you use more, your percentage increase is going down. Maybe I'm just not understanding math. But it makes sense to me, as you use more, why wouldn't the increase be constant? Why would that increase keep decreasing?
Their dollar amounts are going up. I think the percentage is what you're seeing is that's the leveling that they're talking about. But if you're seeing that 2,100 is going from, what, 275 to which one are we looking at? The ones below?
This is the one that I just highlighted.
The average.
I'm just talking about how, like, they get higher, but the percentage that they're paying is a little bit less.
And then with the compression of the blocks, if you use an exceptionally large amount of electricity, when you get down here, from here down, it'll actually goes down under what's proposed.
But they're still paying $300 a month.
Yeah.
Other times a year it goes up $14.
During the summer it goes down a little bit.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Part of this just becomes the philosophy. It seems like I remember that from my water and light board.
If that's the reason why.
You raise your base rate and then not raise how much you pay per kilowatt, or do you keep your base rate low and then you pay for all the energy that you use? And so it was just sort of a philosophical thing, and I'm not sure we've actually come to a combination as a council as to how we want to do it.
Hi, Tom.
Sorry.
I'm just listening.
The idea of having the rates still increase, but at a more level trajectory, is because to do otherwise is to punish the lowest rate payers. That's what our vendor told us at the last work session. The idea is that they're the most inclined to have the least efficiency. So if you put most of the rate into the energy side of the bill, they're the ones who are going to be paying the most right off the bat. This is designed to ameliorate that. And that was a specific request of the Water and Light Board, who's always been kind of part and parcel of how this process works. It's also consistent with the ABPA training we receive, where the notion that reducing the base rate is in favor of the lowest income ratepayers is canard. It's the other way around, because they're the ones that have four windows, is exactly what Council Member Fowler described.
Right.
So they're the ones who are going to be punished first if we invert this.
So I would agree there's a zone between, which one was the line you had, Mr. Sorrell, for what the average, 781 or something?
That's,
718.
That's the average overall.
Okay, so for a person who lives in a non-energy efficient housing,
that's what's highlighted now.
They would enter in those higher kilowatt hours, and then at some point they would exit out because of the size of their house, what they could actually use power for. And then you all also have luxury homes in this town that have all kinds of gadgets and pools and water or whatever systems. Well, that's irrigation. That would be the water bill. But I wish that we were looking at the data that showed us where the average residential customer in a non-energy efficient residential unit enters into higher kilowatt hours and exits out of higher kilowatt hours.
Well, and you said that was the 837 of those who have requested utility assistance.
Who received assistance.
Hi, Steve Helms. We might have questions for you.
Well, before we get there, and to muddy the waters a little bit,
oh,
we're also talking about incentivizing reduction in incentivizing energy efficiency and lesser use. So that's a part of this as well. I know that you all talked about this too. I'm really interested in the low-income households in our community being lesser impacted. I'm also interested in incentivizing less use of electric power. I don't know that, is that a part of this calculation as well?
No,
it's not.
We don't have enough information.
I think my understanding is if we get this, whatever AMI stands for, but once we get that, if people are interested, they can see what their usage is that month at the time, so that it's real time.
At any given time, they would be able to see.
At any given time, allowing hopefully better decision making if they want to as to how much energy they're using, or at least more knowledge about it. But we have to get it in place,
okay,
which we don't have.
And I think that's part of our misnomer, because AMI is a few years down the road. Can't necessarily rely on what we're going to put in. We have to look at the information that we have in front of us at the current moment in order to know if we're going to do a rate increase, what that looks like. And the 6.9%, which is the average, we don't necessarily have to go there, but we know there's that $8.3 million is what we need in order for us to move forward with our bond process. So if you want to tweak that, you can. But what does that look like, and how do you tweak it? It's part of just trying to figure all that out. Now, once we have AMI in, we're not there right now. So right now, we have to look at the information that we have, and what can we do in order to move this process forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pat.
So Nick's point, and we talked about conservation, so now we're back to that point that the consultant two meetings ago mentioned, that if you start implementing conservation measures, you won't recover your demand charge or your demand cost. Help me understand that. Do you understand that? Is that,
I think people just don't use us.
I'm sorry. I'm talking to the folks that work for Water and Light.
Right.
Okay. Did you catch that when what he said, and did that make sense to you?
It makes sense to me. I'm not sure I can completely explain that perspective other than, yes, I don't think that what he was trying to say was increasing the cost per kilowatt hour does not necessarily produce the result, the conservation result that we might be looking for. What he was saying was that by implementing a demand charge on residential, you might be more successful in getting people to conserve. That was the philosophy that he was discussing at that time. We were not proposing that for this because we knew that would just complicate and muddy the waters. We're just trying to focus on, is the $8.3 million, is that a revenue requirement? Is that an acceptable choice for this council for us to move forward and then do a rate design? And for the rate design, we're going to keep the structure the same. It's just, do we go towards a cost of service, which is justifiable, which we can defend, or do we go towards some other sort of rate design that you feel is more, that you can justify to the ratepayers? So those are the things that we're trying to focus on right now, is this revenue requirement, is that something we can move forward with, and then do we move forward with cost of service or some other way of designing the rate? That's really what we need to find out.
So, and a conservation approach to a rate design is not in line with a cost of service?
We don't have current tools for that. The biggest misnomer is that if we had AMI,
mm-hmm.
then you can go for that demand structure. Because we don't have that, it would be very hard to do that on the residential side.
Does the demand charge that we put on commercial or industrial customers result in our seeing energy conservation on their part? Or is it neutral to that?
I think it can.
I mean, do you track that? Do you know that? I know that we used to have all these programs where we would help them swap out certain like light ballasts
lights
and appliances
and
to lower their costs.
Yeah.
they still do.
Which I think was a gift to them rather than a demand charge. I understand it from demands, from a supply point of view and a demands point of view, it had benefits for the utilities as well, but we provided the mechanism for them to lower their costs. So do we have any data that shows that that demand charge is working on conservation? We don't? So it's in there? Okay.
This Wednesday is presented, so that's
okay.
Our agenda.
Big day. Yeah. So going forward, I mean, you know, there's obviously council, community members, they want to make sure that we have fair rates in place. We're able to do the stuff we've promised to do. Energy is delivered, but that we're not having unintended consequences for those who are not able to do. And
oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay, Dave.
No, I don't want to interrupt you.
Okay. So I think what we're looking for is knowing, and it looked like from what you worked with the consultant, that was obviously a consideration that was put in. They did not get rid of our inverted block about our incentivizing on conservation. They tried to lessen the impact on those who have requested assistance for what we have. And it sounds like the utility advisory board is proposing additional funding as well as have identified potential opportunities and additional resources to help with any assistance that's going out there. And at the same time, to Pat's point, I mean, I know when I was on staff, the idea of analyzing those who are requesting assistance and looking at what we can do to increase the efficiency for those homes is a need that we've been talking about for years. And I know we had a report to us not too long ago that we're looking at rental energy efficiency and what can we do to help increase it, whether or not that's incentivizing or whatever it is that we requiring different codes, whatever it is, we are working on that. But we do need to move forward. And to the point about being fiscally responsible, we do need to give advice and guidance today. And I think that staff very much knows of our concerns and considerations for how this affects our more under-resourced households. So tonight, though, you need to know our guidance on the rates, making sure we're getting our revenue up, knowing what's happening with the power cost adjustment. But all of that's still going to come back to us.
Yes.
It's still going to come back to us, and hopefully we'll have even more data, including potentially also from those who are requesting assistance and our advisory board.
Yeah. We just want to bring back something that you agree with.
I can't promise a 7-0 vote.
Well, right, but I mean, we don't want to waste everybody's time, obviously.
Right.
We want to bring back something the majority would.
Well, I think having any additional data that you have that you can include with how we make this decision as far as how are we looking at who is this affecting? You know, what for the households for where it goes up, the average 837 kilowatt hours, I think you said, was the average utility assistance of those requested. So by then, maybe having the data from Health and Human Services, how many were denied? You know, what was the additional ask over that we couldn't provide? Or those sort of data so that we know whether or not that's going to impact more.
Well, and I think it's important to note, this keeps staying in my head, so I'm going to say it, but we did increase the amount that was provided to households, which I was glad to see, and that we raised the level at which people could receive it, 200%. Federal poverty guidelines, that's a good thing. But I want us to keep in mind that there are some people who will not reach out for assistance, but who would qualify.
Yeah.
And they're impacted by this as well. So I'm all for funding as much as we possibly can, the kind of assistance that we're talking about here. But in most cases, I think it's right, Steve, it's one time per fiscal year, right? And so...
Yeah.
It's just one of the struggles about how you best help people who are struggling. I just want to be sure that we're keeping in mind that we're talking about people also who are not making requests for assistance.
Yeah.
See, and I guess I would like to support, speaking differently, the recommendations that the consultant has provided. I'm certainly not an expert on rates. I do feel like for a change, they've been explained and I understand them. not sure I can explain them to anyone, but I understand them. I do think that we need to make sure that we compare bills. And I don't think we can go in and nitpick all of this out. I don't think that's going to work well at all, because I certainly don't have the skills to do that. And that's why we're here.
So, you know, my thing is that we are way overdue in addressing the upgrade to the water treatment plant. And we're getting hung up on, not hung up, but we're, you know, this has the potential to delay that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I would like to see this move forward with all due haste so that we can move forward on the water side. I think the 6.9% in the context of a total of 6.9% over 5 years is, you know, it seems reasonable enough. The power cost adjustment idea sounds like a good one. You know, I would leave it to you guys if you want to, you know, the 6 month lag, you know, whatever is
operational,
you know, is probably, you know, is probably a good idea. You know, if there are alternatives for this rate structure that has been proposed, you know, I think those need to come out, like, you know, now, and have those, you know, alongside the proposal here, you know, in addition to giving Water and Light Advisory Board maybe a little bit of time to look at it and evaluate, you know, but I haven't heard, like, specifics in terms of, like, other ideas or alternatives to what the consultant has proposed.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that we own our own utilities is an amazing, wonderful asset for all of our community. I want us to have enough money to pay our employees well, so they'll continue to work for us and to run our utilities well. But I'm still nagged by this idea that there's something buried in that rate structure that is not fair to our low-income families. I talked to David about it briefly. He said they're going to be having a broader conversation at the Water and Light Board about it. I don't have a problem with the revenue increase or even the percentage that is, but it's always, since we lack so much detail and data on exactly where our families, you know, how much does that, low-income family, when do they enter into a high amount of kilowatt hours, and when do they exit out, and keeping that in mind, as well as other residential and commercial customers, it makes me feel uncomfortable. But I don't object to the fact that we need to have a revenue increase.
Right.
It's how we do it.
Right. And I think you had a good suggestion of also working with those that you were talked about earlier for those who don't know to request.
Oh no, there are some people who know that they would qualify, but they won't apply, mm-hmm. And there are a number of reasons for that. I won't go into, but that's a reality. This is true about many services that are available to people in our community. I used to be afraid that all those folks that would qualify for services from the agency I live would all of a sudden show up because it would be overwhelming.
Right.
So it's just the reality. So when we make these kinds of decisions, we have to keep in mind that there are people who we're not going to help with subsidies. There's not a perfect answer to that question, to that issue. I'm just saying it ought to be in our minds.
Yeah. So I think seeing this come back to us, like as proposed, but with those considerations and any additional data, we obviously want to know. And if by then we have anything from Water and Light Advisory Board also on some of the assistance programs and maybe more data. Did you want to talk now, David?
No,
okay. And then it sounds like power cost adjustment. I assume we're also with Matt, like, however you're going to operationalize it, we don't, as long as it doesn't fall through the gaps and all of a sudden everyone's direct deposit doesn't happen or their bills happen 3 months later, that'll be good to know and not have it happen again. So our next thing, I know we have to talk about transmission.
I do have one more question.
Yeah.
I've forgotten the significance of why you break out rates based on who uses gas heat and who doesn't. Is it because we charge the gas heat slightly more or slightly less?
More.
We charge them slightly more.
Yes. A little bit lower because heat pump or electric heat uses a lot more electricity,
like,
and it incentivizes people to electrify.
Let's speak up.
say, if you're using electric heat versus gas heat,
mm-hmm.
you're going to use a lot more electricity. And so we've charged a lower rate for that.
And that's built into our rate structure?
Currently, yes.
Okay.
So that's the difficulty in trying to address low income is you've got, we don't know what they have in their house. Well, I guess we do.
Do we know that? Do we?
Well,
we know
because
what each
we charge,
house has.
Yeah, we charge.
But we don't know if it's a low income resident.
No, but and do we regularly assess whether that's still true? As far as how we're charging that?
When, if you change your furnace, you're supposed to get building permits, and we update that with those.
Or if your furnace doesn't work anymore and you have it to use electric space heaters to keep your
That wouldn't be accounted for.
That would not be a reason to switch to a different rate class?
No, we wouldn't know that.
I want to move us on a transmission, but actually at some point in time having a question about...
No, I know. Just
electricity and how it's used. No. I'm saying, Pat, yes. Because when I look at other utilities, like most of them don't say, oh, if you have gas heat, we'll do this. And if you have electric heat, we'll do this. It's just, this is your electricity rate. So, going forward. All right, moving on.
The next thing we wanted to talk about was transmission. As you're well aware, we had a transmission project proposed to connect Percy Creek substation to Grindstone substation via Water School Road, Knife on Grindstone. That project was put on hold a few years ago. We've since then had an integrated electric resource plan and master plan that was led by a task force. And we would like some direction on how we might proceed with transmission improvements. I don't want to go back over all the technical stuff that we've gone over in work sessions previously, but there's one thing that's changed now. And the University of Missouri is planning on doing a transmission project. They want to build a redundant 69 kV transmission line into their facility. It's currently in the MISO queue, and they've indicated that they would be willing to cooperate with us to identify land so we could relocate, elevate tanks and substation. The other thing, they have made us aware that they are going to provide a firm transmission capacity request in the future. What that changes with all the discussions we've had with our transmission system is currently our transmission system meets all regulatory requirements. We could improve it and improve reliability, eliminate the need for load shedding under an N-2 contingency. But to provide and agree to provide firm transmission to the university would result in us no longer meeting the regulatory requirements, so an upgrade of some sort would be required in order for us to satisfy that request.
Okay.
And this just shows you what they're planning on doing. The yellow lines are in place, and they would basically break the south line, take it up to a new switch station, and then that other yellow line is already in place, and that would give them a feed then from Grindstone or from Ameson. And it just gives them some more redundancy.
Can you orient me a little bit, like the Stadium Road substation, where is that? And where is the new switch station?
That's Hearns and the softball stadium there.
By the blue? The circular thing that looks like a baseball diamond is the softball stadium.
The road going across the middle is stadium.
General Services Building.
Okay.
Where the yellow and black meet down there below, the big field, is the huge field along the MU Recreation Trail. It has big signs that say, don't fly kites here. It's a perfect space.
Yeah. Now when
we
talk
don't
about
fly kites because there's friends.
Hinkson Substation, you know, this is a picture from spring, from not 2 years ago, when we were in very great danger of losing that substation, so it does need to be elevated.
And this is the one by the MU tennis courts?
Yes.
Or former?
Yes, right there along Hinkson Creek.
Yeah.
So this is a map that shows our existing transmission system. The green lines are 161 kV, and the dashed lines are 69 kV. what came out of the Siemens report for transmission were three different options that would work, and they would be able to provide the firm capacity to MU without violating any of the standards. So I'm going to show you all three of them. The first one is what we had originally proposed a long time ago, which was known as option A, but that's a transmission line that connects Percy to Grindstone, going along Nipong and Water School Roads. That's the red line. This particular solution has more benefit to our system than some of the others, but like I said, all three of them will solve the issues. The next one is what was known as option W out of the Siemens report, and that was to overbuild the existing line between Percy Creek substation, Hinkson substation, and Grindstone, and make that a double circuit. Would have a 161 transmission line and a 69 transmission line. Much more expensive, but it also would solve the issue. Third option that came out of Siemens' report was what they called option F, and that is to tie into Ameren's 345 line and bring a second 161 feet into Percy substation. That would also solve issues in the potential need for load shed would basically go away with any one of these three solutions.
And remind me, we have not talked. This one requires a partnership or cooperative agreement with Ameren.
With Ameren, and there's not been any conversations with Ameren since I've been in this.
But if we advise.
But if you advise us to.
Because there have been back in like 2017, but
yes.
Not.
Yeah, so when Mayor Treese was here, this was his favorite line idea, right?
No, his was the one that went along Ameren up to the north.
Oh, okay.
This is yet a different one.
Oh, okay.
And this option is what Siemens said was the best option. That one. And
no, I think they said
10 out of 11 of the task force members like W. 9 out of 11 like F, 0 out of them like the FAB option.
That option A?
That was option A, yes.
No, like option A?
Yeah, I feel like we saw two different. Yeah, I feel like we saw two different counts for what the task force like.
Yeah, but it wasn't option A, though. It was
Z.
It was what the.
It was something a little different.
Yeah, it was different from A.
Yeah, it was different
from
A.
Well, because it took out a substation down below.
So, really what we would like is to know if we should proceed with the transmission project, and if so, does it internal going from west to east across the city? Would we look at the south alignment or the overbuild? Or do you want us to investigate the potential tie to Ameren?
To me, it seems like there's no harm in investigating the tie with Ameren first, just from the impact on households.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's the potential of the cost for it, but I also know we have some expenses that maybe we had or some equipment that we maybe had purchased under the original idea that might be able to be utilized.
So what came out of the Siemens or task force report was that it said we should pursue two parallel paths for the development of the option with Ameren or
mm-hmm.
The overbuild.
The one that runs through people's backyards on top of existing, but you got to put up new poles.
Yep. But if you'd like us to go speak with Ameren, I can get that set up and we can bring back a report after we have those discussions.
So.
As the person who's in the overbuild.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that. The request from MU. If I'm understanding you, this pretty much means that we're pretty much required to do something in terms of the transmission line now, right? So the idea of doing nothing at this point
is
essentially off the table.
Right. Yes, we cannot continue to keep this on pause because while MU and Mr. Connors here, you'd like to speak, they don't need this tomorrow,
right.
But
they're going to need it, and it's going to take years to get it completed. So we've got to make decisions now in order to ensure their success in the future.
And you say we haven't had a conversation with Ameren since, I suppose you mean you've been director of utilities, right? But there were conversations with them previous to that, isn't that right? As late as 2016, 17? Yeah, so not terribly long ago.
No. This was included in those conversations.
So speaking for me, I would strongly encourage a conversation with Ameren about that. If we can align interests with Ameren and... Did you give us amounts that each of these would cost in your presentation? I know it's in some of the other.
So the Ameren option in $2020, Siemens estimated that would cost $23.6 million.
Uh-huh.
The South alignment, they estimated to cost $21.7 million. And the overbuild alignment, they estimated it cost $33 million.
Uh-huh. So the overbuild is essentially 30% more than the other two options.
It's much more challenging.
I can see how that would be true. It's not hard to imagine.
It would just take all the outage scheduling, and you can only take those lines out during certain periods of the year, so you could only work on it for certain periods, and you'd have to pull off and come back. And just be very difficult to build that and keep it working.
In terms of alignment with other parties, you know, the alignment with MU in terms of rebuilding and relocating, if necessary, the Hinkson substation, that sounds, critical as well. You know, number one, it addresses the problem of potential flooding there. But number two, I mean, there's a cost share that goes along with that, right?
I think the cost share on that, it's our substation, it would probably be our expense. They may provide the property, but we haven't gotten into that detailed of a discussion yet. They said they're willing to cooperate.
Right. So identify the property.
If they would provide a location, that'd be very valuable in and of itself.
And then in terms of building that redundant 69 kV connection into Mizzou, that would be a cost share? Is that their responsibility?
They would do that.
They would do 100% of that.
If I understand correctly, that's your expense, correct?
It has to be determined.
Oh. Okay.
Oh,
that's PC talk.
Mm. What we have to do is they have to pay transmission charges. And what we can't do is have them pay for that line and then have to pay us back.
On top of it, okay.
So we got to figure out how do we work the agreement out so that
we would pay up front and they would pay back over time.
Yes,
or
one of the two got to be figured out. I'm guessing right now, probably. We'll figure that out.
Well, I like this idea of synergies and being able to work with the other parties that are around us and have interests that are all aligned.
Get that.
Can you go back to the flooding station? So is replacing or raising or relocating this substation connected with the Ameren option? It's not, is
no.
it? So even at that price point, we would still have to then expend resources to either raise or move this. How urgent is the raising and moving of this? Is that something's going to happen first, or?
I don't know at this point, because it depends ultimately on what transmission option we do. But it's been there for, I don't know when it was built. I'm thinking in the 50s maybe, or 60s, and it's not flooded yet. But that doesn't. It will one day.
Clarification on what Pat just said. Pat, you just said, is it included in the Ameren? So does that mean it is included in the estimate for the other two?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, this has not been included in the.
Any of the $3 you just gave us.
Rebuilding this, relocating this has not been included.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Pat. I want to clarify that.
So we're at 23, 21, and 30 something.
Right.
for the three choices. Why do you you won't call it option A anymore, will you? You're calling it the South Route. Do you have any? I get that. Do you have a picture of all three of them so we can at least put them all in the same context?
I have them on three different maps.
Yeah. That is okay. That's
so.
Which one is that?
That's the South alignment.
Okay.
And the overbuild goes over the existing line.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see them both on there.
Yep, okay.
And then this third one is coming from the west side of town on Ameren's line and coming into Pershing substation.
Is it the blue line?
What's
no,
the red line?
The red. Blue
the
line
red,
is
the L.
Bell
on the L right
side.
Here?
Yeah, the
yeah.
Red L. Blue line is the boundaries.
The blue line is the Ameren. There's two blue lines.
Oh, the blue line is that blue line is Ameren.
Blue line's Ameren. The red line that comes north south down to the green line and over to
the
east is the proposal.
And the darker blue line is where your territory, Water and Light customers versus somebody else.
That's territory.
Mm-hmm.
That red line is the proposed F option.
Mm-hmm. F.
Yeah.
I should have called it L. It's easier to remember.
So one of the things, too, so I had the opportunity a few weeks ago to participate in, there's a guidebook out helping show where infrastructure investment funds and other things coming out of Department of Energy and also IRS rulings will help us with paying for some of these things. So I don't know what we're looking into. I know that I assume you all are looking into this.
We've asked our grants administrator to investigate that and find out what we may be eligible for.
Right. Because I know we've talked about some things that it will help reduce the cost a lot for us to put in our infrastructure funds. The fact that municipal governments have not normally been able to use tax credits, and now we will.
Mm-hmm.
IRS is allowing that ruling. So just, I want to make sure as we're looking at these dollars, we're not forgetting that piece into what we're doing and what we're putting in. I think the other thing, and I'm sure Tom probably wants to talk about this because it's like his jam, but the other thing I'm thinking about is that besides just this need for the fixed cost of what we have to do for MU, we are part of a transmission system for the energy, electricity going through us to other places. So let's say we do the Ameren tie. What's next? Right? So thinking about those things that are coming up, and is that enough? Or does that weigh into what happens on this west-to-east transmission line, how we tie it into Boone Electric? I just don't know. Whatever.
I don't have a crystal ball, but if we want to do things like get rid of the energy center, which is greenhouse gas emissions,
mm-hmm.
at some point you're going to have to build a line going east-west. Because it only any of these only work as long as that Columbia Energy Center is in place and available.
Right.
And
we have no options north of town or, you know, or
well,
maybe we just haven't looked at it.
Ultimately, you would probably build another 161 line going north. So you'd end up with one north and south, ultimately, would be my guess in the long term. Particularly if you go with more electrification, more electric vehicles, get rid of gas heat, you're going to need to import more renewable energy to power all that.
So a west to east line or east to west line is going to be mandatory in the future?
That would be my guess, is that at some point in the future it would still have to be done. And without stopping and closing the doors, there's other benefits that that east west connection provides that the F does not provide for exactly what you were talking about, is transmitting energy through our system.
And there's no, so we're talking right now about potentially tying in with Ameren. There's obviously transmission lines south of us with other utilities. So there's no potential similar to what we're talking here doing that with any of those?
That would have to be looked into further.
Okay. Yeah, Betsy.
It seems to me that when this was discussed 7 or 8 years ago, one of the issues was trying to separate the transmission lines so that you didn't have a number of transmission lines all together for any problems with straight line winds or tornadoes or whatever, that the idea was to have redundancy in the system. And so you actually wanted some separation. So
if one, you know, one thing went down, you could then move power to a different direction. Has that philosophy changed so that now we're okay with the Ameren line and the Columbia line going the same place, or?
We would probably be better off with building a second line further south than the current line and tying Hershey and Grindstone together.
Thank you.
That's my opinion. But as I said, all three of them will address
the current needs. Yes. Right. Right.
But it'd be preferred for us to have some guidance on how to move forward so that we're not just stuck in this no movement scenario that we've been in for years.
How many years?
2017, I believe.
2016.
7 years.
Yeah, because I was just on council and it was one hell of a public hearing.
So I think I it sounds like we'd at least like some answers to the investigating the tie with Ameren.
We'll do that first.
But there's obviously the questions of the future, which is the next piece. Did you have any questions?
No, I was just going to, so in terms of moving power, you know, from west to east in terms of like Kansas to Illinois, I mean, there are other upgrades in underway, you know, Grain Belt, if that goes through, what MISO is doing north of town, right, tied into Thomas Hill. So some of those like super highway kind of questions are there are the things that are worked there.
Yes.
So, right? Yeah.
There are others that work there.
Yeah.
Right. And those some of those are have been new. They were not
right.
on the table in 2016. So I think having some more of those answers, the Ameren one buys us a little bit of time to get answers on what else is happening. Yeah.
Okay, one or two more things.
Okay.
So Siemens said that we did not necessarily need to build a new substation, but expand our existing substations. Hershey Creek substation is very heavily loaded, if you remember from the reports. We have long lead times on these items, like transformers are about 2 years now.
We already have some.
And I would like to go ahead and proceed with expansion of Hershey substation and with Volstead substation. And what I would propose to do is use the transformers that we bought for the proposed Mill Creek substation at Volstead. Yes.
I thought these were like
we can,
custom built.
We can do that.
Okay.
We would take that. It'd be a 161 to 13.8. We'd expand its capacity, and basically then we would have the 69 to 13.8. Transformers at Volstead that we could move one to Hershey while we're waiting the 2 years or whatever for the new one to come in. And then relocate and upgrade these. If you think those are good ideas and we can begin the processes.
I like the first two. The relocate and upgrade Houston substation sounds like it's more.
It'd have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, that is more dependent on. Transmission lines and
what
MU is doing.
With the university and getting an agreement lined out.
Yeah.
But it would seem reasonable to me to upgrade the other two, but
start planning for these things in our capital improvement.
Right.
Not in there right now.
Okay.
And now with all the current funding potential, with some of the federal funding, like this is a good time to also look into this because investing in utility infrastructure, there's a lot of opportunity.
A lot of this, too, were recommendations from the task force. And they spent 3 years looking at all of this and reported back to us a year and a half ago, I think.
Yeah.
I know that everything, the world continues to change. However, I appreciate the work that they did. And, given the time and energy that they spent on it, I think all of these things, sort of honor their work as well.
A lot of work.
Is there other things, like, on the checklist that are going to be coming to us or the, on that, to that point, that we're going to expect to see or that we should be seeing?
From the report.
From the task force, IRMP.
I mean, AMI was like their highest priority.
AMI is in process. Well, like I said, we did the RFP. We got the results back and we scheduled an interview.
Mm-hmm. I think it was June of last year that
about
we had
the service study that they worked on.
Yeah.
It was talked about. Substation expansions that were recommended by the report as opposed to a new substation. We talked about transmission tonight. The distribution system stuff, when we discussed that earlier at our work sessions previous, we have historically done a pretty good job of doing distribution feeders and such without doing the plan the way they said, go out and put this line in, replace it with X, because we need to respond to where the development's happening, not where it's projected to happen.
Yeah.
So those you'll just those will happen as they go.
Okay.
I'm just looking at Tom if that's fair with your recollection of your recommendations.
Yeah, but with respect to the costs for these different projects, I would toss all that out completely. Everything has to be repriced, not just because it's all extremely stale, but now everything, every single component of these projects is subject to discount.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be identical because easements are not tax credit eligible. There are no easements in hand for that south route. So that's going to be a lot more than some of these other things.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, unless Ameren comes out with some agreement, which I think they would, and it might be a bigger discount because they are a taxpayer, which means they could own and take advantage of not just of the tax credits, but of the depreciation losses, which is better than what the municipalities are afforded under the
Act.
It's going to be a much bigger discount. Unfortunately, it's starting from scratch.
Yeah. I think it's kind of post-COVID. Yeah. Do you have what you need from us for direction on going forward? Okay. What's the timeline expected with some of these things coming back to council? Do we have one? I know you're waiting for another Water and Light Advisory Board meeting before the rates or PCA come back to us. So that won't be until May or June.
May or June, the rates. And then as soon as we can get something scheduled to meet with Ameren and get some preliminary results back, I can get a report, but I don't. I haven't made a phone call yet, so I don't even know when we'd be able to meet.
Okay.
Mayor, could we restate what staff understood to be the guidance from us that we're pursuing Ameren and we're back to what used to be called, formerly known as Option A?
No.
We're not?
No,
yeah.
we're talking about this option up in the west side of Columbia.
The L.
That's with Ameren.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it.
That's our first for the kind of more immediate future because it still meets the need of the firm commitment to MU needs for theirs and solves the redundancy issue of the concern. But then the next step is where could we do looking
that
into
future line.
And also part of that is looking at more real costs because as Tom just said, all the costs that were included in it and the costs from 2016
mm-hmm.
are different. Mm-hmm. So what are opportunities?
Okay, so we're just at the L right now, which is not called L. Okay.
F.
F, but it's not an L.
It is now.
It's an L.
It's literally what I wrote in the notes.
What?
Optional. Yeah.
Optional.
Yeah, I'm just going to confuse everybody.
You named it, right? Okay. Very good. Oh. All right. Anything else? So, Carlin, do you have anything else for our work session? All right, I'll go ahead, 6:38, I'll go ahead and adjourn our work session. Please be on.